You're listening to Packers Talk Network.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Hi, this is Jerry Kramer, and you're listening to The Sweep.
Oh, I have sizzle.
I don't even know what that means.
No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
Knives
gets the people going.
All right, here we go, fella. Let's have a little fun today.
What is going on, Pack Nation? Welcome back. The Sweep is back. We've had a fantastic summer so far, some hot, some rain. We are finally back. We took some time off to kind of enjoy ourselves and spend some time with family, but we are both itching to be back, to talk some football, talk Packers, talk sports in general here in Wisconsin as everything starts to kind of get going again. We got the Brewers happening. Training camp starts soon. Sports are back. And so we are back. The Sweep is back. I am back. Blaine is back, who I feel like I haven't gotten a chance to talk to in so long. So let's welcome in my lovely co-host, Mr. Blaine Hornes. How's it going, my man?
It's going good. It's been a pretty busy summer so far, but it feels good to be back on the mic getting ready for what I think is going to be a fun season.
I think it's going to be an incredible season. I think it's. I think we flew under the radar here again with Rodgers being down. And I think people aren't really giving us the respect that we deserve. So it's going to be exciting. I'm excited to talk about it. You mentioned busy summer. Absolutely. We both have kids. It just does not stop. I have, obviously, the young Charles who doesn't stop and Ethan who's in tons of sports. So it's a constant thing. But I'm excited to be back. It feels like it's been way too long since we have blessed the mic. So I'm hoping that everyone else is as excited. And we can kind of get back into our groove here because it's coming. Football's right around the corner. I can feel it. I can sense it. But before we get into it, let's quick just say hey to our incredible sponsors, Pride and Glory, still with us. And, of course, the Ground Round and Nina, who has been our faithful sponsor since day one. They are amazing. I actually have not found the time to get out and enjoy their patty shack and out there in that patio with the music and all the great things that Ryan Bally, the manager there, is putting together. We love them. We couldn't thank them enough for joining us and being a part of this show. So definite shout out to them. You will hear from him a little later on. And speaking of the Ground Round, a huge thing that we do with the Ground Round, this will be our second year, is the Sweep fundraiser, which we did last year, which was our first year. A lot of fun, some cool auction items, talk some football, families running around. This year, expect it to be even better. There's even more additions to the Ground Round. Families will still be there. We've got Glenn Derby coming in, who was on the show not too long ago. He'll be coming down with the trench training, or I should say coming up, I'm sorry. He's in southern Wisconsin. He'll be coming up with some of the guys from Trench Training, which is a program that he runs down there in the Milwaukee area that really focuses on the trenches, the offensive linemen and defensive linemen. If you guys get a chance, check them out on Facebook. It is awesome. He does a lot of inspirational videos and also shows their training. It's really cool stuff. If you have a son who's on the offensive line or defensive line in middle school or in high school, you should definitely look at that camp because they are incredible. He'll be there. Obviously, Blaine and I will be there. But we have an incredible silent auction this year. Some just awesome, awesome stuff. Full-size signed helmets from Jerry Kramer, Devontae Adams, HaHa Clinton Dix, jerseys from HaHa Clinton Dix, Devontae Adams. We got really great pictures, posters, things like that. Some football signed, just a ton of stuff. It's going to be huge. It's going to be incredible. Bring your wallets because it will be fun to donate and to auction on these items, which proceeds from some of this event will go to the Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's Research, which is a very near and dear to my heart. So it's something that we're putting together for a good cause and to raise awareness not only for Parkinson's research, but a little bit for the sweep. Have you guys kind of come down, talk some football, get involved with us. I know Blaine loves it. I love it. We love when we have fan involvement and being able to talk with you guys and hang out with you guys. And I know we're all kind of getting to that point where we're getting itchy for football. So this will be a great opportunity on July 28th at 3 p.m. at the Ground Round in Yeena to come down, hang out, talk some football, get some drinks, have some food, bid on a couple items. You might win, you might not, and just have a great time. That's what we're all about, just to kind of kick off football a little bit. Like I said, me, Blaine are going to be there. Are you bringing the fam?
I'm going to try. I don't know what the wife has planned for me and the kids that day exactly, so we'll see if we wear them out too much or not. But I assume they'll be there for at least a little bit to come show some support and say hi to everybody. I just don't know how long they'll hang around.
Yeah, I'm super pumped. I can't wait to do it. It'll be the second year, like I said. And again, couldn't do it without the Ground Round. Those guys are amazing. They're always been so supportive of us. And so it'll be kind of indoor, outdoor. It'll be out in the Patty Shack is where we'll have all the stuff. But we'll be a little bit outdoors as well. So it's going to be a fun, just casual hang out, run around. Kids can play in the playground area they have there. They just put up, and it's nothing stuffy. It's not your pinky in the air silent auction. It's going to be real casual, but with some top shelf items, some really, really cool stuff that we've been able to acquire over the last year. And I'll be honest with you, it's hard to even depart with some of it. I've been looking at it and I'm like, I could just keep this all right. but I would probably not end up with a wife. She would probably kill me. So, but I'm excited for you guys to come down and enjoy. So make sure you guys do that again, July 28th, 3 p.m. at the Ground Round, Yeena. Come hang out with us. Other than that, I think we're kind of caught up here, aren't we? I mean, we got the fundraiser down, gave some love to the sponsors. It's the time to talk some football.
I think so. Where do you want to start? You want to start with something that's been on my mind for the last probably week or so?
Yes, you do it. You start it off.
All right. So those of you that follow us on Facebook, which if you don't, you should. Facebook, The Sweep, and put that up in that little search bar up there and you can find us. That's probably our main source of communication besides our actual podcast. We post a lot of information about what's going on with us and what we're going to talk about on the next show, post fan questions. You guys can interact with us, ask us questions. So I was listening to the radio on my way to work the other day, and there was some people on the radio just talking mad smack about the NFL. And these are ex-NFL guys that are on the radio. And the discussion was that every time there's news in the NFL, it's negative. And this was pretty much regarding the LeSean McCoy accusations that have been brought up, and how, you know, when there's something going on in the NFL, it's negative all the time. And it brought in a lot of phone calls from fans on their show about how they don't watch the NFL. And one of the reasons they don't is because of the domestic abuse stuff and the protests at the beginning of games and all the different reasons they don't like Roger Goodell. They don't like this. They don't like that. So I kind of posed the question and asked on our Facebook page, which U.S. sport, major sport, NHL, NBA, MLB, NFL, MLS, what am I missing? Tennis, golf, which one has the best product on the field? And, you know, being a Packers podcast, I kind of assumed that most of our answers would be, of course, it's the NFL. That's what we all love. That's what we focus on. But at the same time, there were enough responses that people liked other sports, which is totally cool. But at the same time, my point to asking this question was, not to say that domestic abuse and protests and all the other things that people don't watch the sport for, I'm not saying it doesn't matter, but ultimately to be a fan of the NFL, isn't the game and what happens on the field what we should be, you know, thinking about, like why we're a fan? All the other stuff, that shouldn't make you a fan or not a fan, should it?
I think it's got to factor. I think you have to factor it to a degree.
And here's my thing against the other leagues when that comes to that. In soccer, in baseball, in basketball, in hockey, there's far less people on those teams. There's a 53-man roster active on Sunday, and how many are on the roster throughout the year, including practice squad players, like 64 or something?
Yeah.
That's during the season. Then in the off season, there's all kinds of guys all over. There's 90-man rosters. There's people all over the place. The chances for NFL players to get in trouble are far more. There's so many more people involved in the sport. There's 32 teams that have up to 90 people on it at any given time. The chances and the opportunity for bad things to happen just based off of the numbers, that there's going to be more situations. I'm not saying that's an excuse and it's okay, but it's going to happen just off of the sheer number of people involved in the sport. The NBA has what, 11 guys on a roster?
Yeah, it's not much more than that.
So I mean,
how many teams does the NBA have?
I think
30. It doesn't even matter. Even if they have 32, they're still drastically smaller than the NFL. And that's right. A good point. Chances are, on average, that you're going to have more with the NFL because there's more people.
Right. And that's my biggest thing.
You can say that, but why does it seem like there's so many more domestic cases and just bigger things than and NBA is similar, but like baseball, hockey, NASCAR, golf, soccer, whatever you want to call it, none of those really have the same issues. And that's a cause for concern to me.
What's the most aggressive sport there is?
NFL.
What type of a person do you need to be
right
when you're on the field? I mean, I'm not making excuses, and I don't want anybody to think that I'm saying that it's okay for domestic abuse to happen. I am not even close. It makes me sick, some of the stories we hear. But it can't take anybody by surprise, given the nature of the sport, that there's going to be guys when you have up to 90 people on 32 teams that have to play nasty on Sundays or Mondays or Thursdays or whatever days they're playing now.
Yeah. They are asked to turn into animals.
Right.
Basically on a Sunday.
They're supposed to turn it off whenever they go home.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that it's okay not to. They absolutely should have to. But it has to come with some thought in your head that, hey, there's a possibility that this is going to happen once or twice a year. That's the reality of life. And it's not okay. And they should do everything in their power to fix it and make it better. But I guess my biggest point is it shouldn't take away from the product on the field. And I don't think it does. Now, everybody has their right to not watch the NFL because of it. But it shouldn't change their opinion of the product on the field. Because to me, in my opinion, and everybody can have theirs, the best sport to watch, especially from your coach and in person, is the NFL. There's no experience like it. And maybe I'm biased because I'm a Packer fan and we get to go to Lambeau pretty much when we want. And it's a beautiful place to be. It's the best place to be. It's the best place to watch a game. I hear people say, well, the best place to watch a game is the coach. Then you haven't been to Lambeau in a really good game for a really good game. Because if you've been to a really good game at Lambeau, you know that is the most electrifying place and best place to watch Packer game.
Well, to watch a football game in general.
Right. Badgers, Packers, whoever.
Yeah. It's It's tough. I mean, I personally feel the same when it comes to football. I've said for a very long time that I thoroughly enjoy watching hockey games live. On TV, it's not as much, but if you ever go on to a hockey game, a true hockey game, and collegiate hockey even more so, being in Wisconsin, it's a little, again, we're a little biased because we've had really well, really good hockey teams over the last couple of decades. But those are just incredible when it comes to intensity and just an incredible speed and excitement to a game.
The one thing I have about hockey is if you didn't play or you didn't follow the game,
if you don't know hockey, then yeah, you know,
it's hard to follow. And that's my problem.
But you can say that about any sport, though. I mean, if you don't follow football or you haven't played it, you're not going to care or know how football is. Same with soccer. Same with
I think football is so universal in this country that it's hard not to know about football. I mean, and I'm not saying everybody knows all the rules inside and out and follows it as tight as we do and most of our listeners do. I'm saying that the average person can see a football game on TV and generally know what's going on. In hockey, there's offsides, there's icing, there's all different kinds of rules that stop the game regularly that people just don't understand. I don't understand it because I don't watch it enough. I didn't grow up playing it. I can't watch a hockey game on TV.
Here's the devil's advocate towards this. The NFL stops the game a lot for penalties and for crap like that. And I'll tell you what, I mean, just from my personal experience, I've been around people that are like, now what? What's going on here? I mean, even my wife, who is I give a lot of credit to and is very intelligent when it comes to the game, even sometimes she's like, okay, well, what's the flag for now? And that is the case. I mean, it's becoming a sport where the flags are coming out a lot more than we'd like. So there is that. I think that we are just so incredibly biased because we are in a football state.
You're probably right.
We live in a state where it's weird if you don't, because if you're not a Packer fan, you're not from here. That you can't possibly be from here. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. We don't understand it. And I don't know if that's the same place everywhere. I mean, I remember when I lived in Florida and talking about, and this is not the game of football, but talking about tailgating, and they didn't even know what that was. They thought that was ridiculous. They were like, wait a minute, so you like hang out outside your car and drink and eat? And I'm like, yes. Yep. And they're like, awesome. Why? And I'm like, no, why haven't you? That's the question here. What are you doing with your life? So I think that's just comes to a point where you're like, okay, hold on a second. These people aren't from a state that literally eats, breathes green and gold. I mean, this whole state turns. We have to, because when it becomes cold and becomes winter, becomes that time of year, that's kind of what we cling on to get us through the winter. That's why last winter was so rough, because we lost Rodgers, and I think everyone's kind of lost steam with the season, and it just felt like it lasted forever. But that's what gets us through. Green Bay
pretty much come November, it's deer hunting, ice fishing, and Packers.
Yeah,
that's pretty much all we got,
and we tailgate for all of them pretty much.
Right,
I mean, that's not how it is. Like that's just the life of a Wisconsin person. And then when summer comes, we have 3 months of running around and enjoying the warm, and we kind of forget a little bit about football, but we get little hints and traces here and there. And then it's like August comes and school starts and life begins again. We go into Packer mode where, all right, here we go. This is season. This is the time to get serious. Let's get our shit together. But going back to just your question, you know, when it comes to product on and off the field, it really does come down to, I think, people's personal opinions. There's people that I know who are diehard baseball fans, and they would tell you that baseball is America's pastime, and it is the most beautiful, thought out sport, and blah, 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 blah. Whereas I look at it and I'm not a huge fan of baseball because I was terrible at it. And I didn't have a family that necessarily always got super into it. And so growing up, it wasn't always a huge deal for me. And we live in a place where the Brewers weren't always that good. I love the Brewers and I'll watch a game here and there and I'll definitely watch, you know, playoffs. I will never say that I'm a monster Brewer fan because I'd be lying and I think it'd be unfair. But I love them because it's my home team. But there's a perfect example of me not being able to give a proper opinion about baseball because I didn't know it. I don't play it. I don't watch it.
But I think the biggest thing for baseball and even the NBA to a degree is that their seasons are so long.
It's hard to get excited about every
game. For baseball, there's 5 games a week. Right. And for basketball, there's 3. For the NFL, there's 1.
And you can lose games. You can't lose games. Any lost game is a game changer. And not only NFL, but collegiate football as well. I mean, college football, you're pretty much out of the question if you lose a game. I mean,
I kind of lump college and I probably shouldn't because they're totally different. They're really not the same game.
Not at all.
College football and the NFL are they're football. So they're the same game, but in the same conversation, they're totally different.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
it's crazy how good you can be in college. And as soon as you get to the NFL, you're just average.
Well, and it's crazy how you can be not that great in college and all of a sudden somehow find it in the NFL. I mean, it goes both ways. It's an incredible thing. And I think college is sometimes almost more intense because you are really playing for an opportunity and a chance.
Well, the losing thing in college is even more magnified than it is in the NFL.
Absolutely.
And you want to know why? Because they play even less games than the NFL do.
Yes.
So anybody that this is a whole nother topic, but I'm gonna kinda touch on it a little bit here, is anybody that thinks extending the season to 18 games in the NFL is a good idea, I think needs to really look into it and evaluate that. Because I think it's gonna oversaturate. And because I think that's what the NBA and MLB have done to their sport. Is people complain about baseball games being too long. Well, is it the games that are too long, or is it just that there's too many games to watch? Because if you want to watch every game of a Brewers season, good luck. If you can take 3.5 hours out of every single day to sit down and watch a Brewer game every day from the start to the end of the season, which I'm sure there's people that do, but I bet you there's not a lot of middle-aged people that are able to do that, that have kids and have other things going. I mean, there's just way too much stuff going on. Right. It's just crazy that there's 162 games in a season, and it goes from, I mean, spring training even, there's people that watch it all the way through. It's crazy how long that season is. And you look at me and Dustin File on this Facebook question I asked, kind of had this conversation. The American League right now in baseball, it's pretty much over. The playoff teams have already been set, and the All-Star break is tomorrow. So how interested can any team's fans be that's not in first place? The only people that are watching the games now are the people that are in first. Boston, the Red Sox, Houston, and I forget who the other really good team is in the AL. But on that side of the coin, there's only, you know, 4 or 5 teams that are even worth watching because the rest of them are done. So how exciting can it be? How good is that product when they're halfway through the season and the playoffs are pretty much decided already?
Well, and I've always told people for the longest time as well that that when it comes to the NBA especially, but you could even consider the MLB in this one, I don't really care for watching the NBA during the season. I will. I mean, I shouldn't say I don't care because I do actually watch a lot of NBA games during the season. But I really enjoy watching the playoffs because that's when I feel – the play is just better in general, more defense personally. But even then, even if you consider just the playoffs of the NBA are almost as long as the NBA or NFL season. I mean, the amount of games, I mean, that's kind of crazy. I mean, their playoffs are as long as the NFL, for gosh sakes. I just think that watching the games during the season for the MLB and the NBA is just like, oh, well, I guess we lost the game. I don't want to feel that way. Like, I want to feel more like heartbroken, truly heartbroken when we lose games. Like, with the NFL, we lose a game, it's like, oh my gosh. And then you start thinking, we're going to have to win this one then to get through this. You know, like, you have to, it's so important. Where in the NBA, it's like you lose a game, it's like, okay. And so the value I put on games is just not as much. And I think that makes me lose the interest a little bit during the season. And that's where I kind of fall. Like I said, I'm not a huge Brewer fan, but I like watching baseball and I like love the Brewers. NBA is above that. But yeah, I mean, that's a long season. And yeah, you forget at some point, like, oh, they're still going, or oh, they already started, or it's just it's hard to get super into it.
Well, and another thing about, you know, how you said, yeah, football has a lot of breaks where, you know, there's a lot of flags, there's a lot of penalties. But at least when you know a snap is coming, you got 4 or 5 seconds usually per play to enjoy the intensity. Baseball, yeah, every pitch, how long does it take for a pitcher to get the ball to the catcher? A second?
Yeah.
If it's a strike, awesome. Then you wait, 2 minutes until there's another one. And if it's a hit, how long does that last? Maybe 5 seconds, maybe. And there's maybe 10 of those in over a 3-hour span on average, probably 10 to 15 hits a game. Yeah. And maybe 1 or 2 home runs a game over 3 hours. Now, every time the ball is snapped, something good happens, whether it's on offense or defense.
We are a society based heavily on instant gratification, and
I think the NFL gives you
Yeah, and that's why I think that baseball, as much as it's America's pastime and all those good things, that's why baseball, I think, has kind of dwindled amongst the list of like the top three, which is NFL, NBA, and MLB. I think that it's starting to kind of move away, which let me get it into the NBA in just a second. But it's like soccer too, you know, where you like, I love soccer, but a lot of people don't, because they're like, I'm not going to spend 90 minutes, which they don't have many stops. But I'm not going to watch 90 minutes and I might see a goal. Like, no, I don't have time for that. People,
the thing about soccer is in the United States anyways, is it's not a big enough deal for a long enough time yet. And what I mean by that is it hasn't been, it's not a dominating sport yet, and it needs to happen over time. Like, if the men's U.S. national team would make it to the World Cup and win one, you're going to see.
Oh, that'd be huge.
We haven't had that dominance in that sport. So it's going to be really hard for a country to rally around a professional, the MLS, let's say, because first of all, none of those guys have a name to American people.
No.
I mean, everybody knows. That's what I'm saying. And I'm not knocking soccer at all, because I'm not a huge sit down and watch soccer fan, but I played until I got to high school. You and I played on a lot of teams together. I like soccer. I like to play soccer. Now, watching soccer is awesome when you're watching good soccer players.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that the United States don't have good soccer players, but we don't have nearly as many good soccer players as the European leagues do.
Well, and for sure. In European, that's their thing, is soccer is pretty much their MO.
Their NFL.
But here's the thing with soccer, and I'm very excited to see the expansion of the MLS. And I mean, I remember when it first started and where it's gotten to now.
Definitely on its way up.
Yeah, for instance, in 94, when the World Cup was in the United States in 94, we only had 3 whole sites, because that's the only stadiums that were available. Now I think there's like 16 that are in just the upcoming World Cup, 2028 or whatever it is.
Yeah, those are strictly soccer.
And strictly soccer stadiums, where the 3 stadiums in 94 were the Coliseum, MetLife, and what's the place? Soldier Field in Chicago. So none of them were soccer places. They were all football fields converted. But
well, now there's a football team playing on a soccer field.
For sure.
In LA.
And that's crazy. That's a right. huge advancement. And that's how it's going to have to happen. It's going to keep going. It's interesting. We actually were talking about one of the responses on the question earlier, a guy by the name of Nate Baldwin, who is in the Appleton area. He runs a lot of the Parks and Rec. He has an incredible viewpoint on this, which is funny that we're bringing this up now, but, and I think the main thing with soccer, and I wish he was on the show for to back us up or back me up on it, but it's just the youth programs, feeder programs for soccer are just, there's nothing to it. Kids play in grade school. They play in middle school. Some will maybe play in high school, but a lot of them don't because there's no collegiate future for them when it comes to soccer. The college soccer is not a thing. There's not a lot of, not a lot of guarantee when it comes to that. So a lot of players, good, really good soccer players, end up either just stopping after high school or maybe play collegiate, but not intentionally or intently.
For example, and I'm pretty sure you know him, I'm blanking all of a sudden. Adam Pullman from Neenah.
Yeah.
I think he graduated 4 or 5 years ago. He won Gatorade Player of the Year. He was a national All-American, one of the best soccer players I've ever seen. Not just a soccer player either. The kid's a phenomenal athlete. He had a full ride scholarship to Milwaukee and gave it up at the last minute to play basketball in Northern Michigan and ended up transferring from Northern Michigan down to Florida to play soccer and basketball. And then he ended up transferring again to St. Louis to play basketball on a Division II scholarship. And he knew his big decision, and I talked to him about this on a couple of different occasions, and his old man, his big thing was he knew that there wasn't a future for him in soccer, and that if he was going to become a coach, which I think he definitely should and will be very successful at someday, is it's probably going to be in basketball. And basketball was really his true passion. He enjoyed it a little bit more, I think. I think he misses soccer, and if he thought he could have done it that way with soccer, he would have, but it's just not there yet. And right. this, I'm not talking about any soccer player. The kid was an All-American at the high school level, one of the best soccer players ever to come through the Neenah area, and that's saying a lot because the Neenah area for soccer is, like, one of the best in our state.
Yeah, and that's my point, and that was – a perfect example, because I think there's just not the opportunity for kids to really embrace it. And they lose, the MLS loses a ton of talent because of that. And you're losing out on, you know, guys like Pullman who could have potentially been great. And then not only that, if they do come to, you know, they do go collegiate and they're actually good enough to go to MLS. If they're good enough, they're going to go overseas and play European League, you know, premiership or Spanish premier division, whatever, because that's going to give them better competition and better, you know, better results in the long run for players. So I think the thing with the MLS, and this is what's exciting about it, is that they are expanding, and I think they're bringing players over, trying to bring people back from Europe over. Usually they're on their last part of their career, but they're doing the right things and they're on the right path. But to kind of wrap it up, I think, you know, for one, the question is a great question, and I think you could probably debate it until you're blue in the face for any one of the sports. When it comes down to it, me and you, I think, both agree that football is the best product on the field. As far as off the field,
a lot to figure out.
There's some definite concerns there.
And I think number one reason why is Roger Goodell, because it seems like since he's been here, it's gotten worse.
I'm not a huge fan of Goodell. I think what he does, I think he's done a lot of great, but I think that's all been overmasked by the things that he has let happen. And
he's done great for the owners. He's done nothing but make the NFL money.
Yeah. A lot and of it. Too much of it almost.
He sacrifices
the integrity.
Yeah, some integrity of the league I think both of our opinions, I think we're on the same page when it comes to Roger Goodell, is he's been awesome leader for the owners because he gets them to maximize their dollar. And that's what the owners want ultimately. But at the same time, and I'm not saying in my opinion, and I don't know how you carry it, it doesn't change how I view the NFL as a fan of the game.
Yes.
It just makes me think in the back of my mind, who can we replace Roger Goodell with that can be just as good for the owners, but be better for the Shield and that NFL brand? Because I don't think he's not hurting the game. He's hurting the brand. And at the same
time, I think it's opposite. I think that he is enhancing the brand. He's hurting the game because he's more concerned about getting a team in Europe and getting a team in Mexico and doing Thursday night games and doing these. And he wants money. He wants the bottom dollar. He wants all the money and he wants the owners to have the money. And in the meantime, he's ruining the integrity of the game because he's jeopardizing players by having to play extra games, having to do these extra travels. And I think that
I think we're looking at it on totally different angles because I'm looking at it as he's hurting the Shield because he can't set a specific set of rules and circumstances for if the player does this, this is their punishment. Because somebody can go beat their wife or their girlfriend and get 2-game suspension, and the next guy can go beat his wife or beat his girlfriend and he can get 6 games. It just kind of depends. There should be no circumstance there. It's either you did it or you didn't, and either you should be done or you get an 8-game suspension, whatever it is.
Yeah.
There should be no gray area there. And yeah. I kind of blame a little bit on the players union as well because they agreed to all of this. And there needs to be some player accountability as well. I mean, we can't ultimately just put everything on Roger Goodell. Ultimately, he's going to get the blame for it because he's the face and he's the commissioner. But when I say it hurts the brand, I'm saying it's not hurting the product on the field. What Roger Goodell is doing, in my opinion, the product on the field is pretty much impossible to hurt unless you start changing rules that are so egregiously bad. And we can totally get into that, but
I don't think he really has an effect on the product on the field because these guys are going to come on into the
NFL. That's what I'm saying. That's kind of my point of the question,
right?
Is that all of the circumstances, the protests, the domestic abuse, the marijuana usage and the failed drug tests and all that stuff, that doesn't change the fact that on Sundays, it's still a good product.
Yeah.
That's my point. If you don't want to know about that stuff, don't read about it. I know it's hard to do that, but think about the actual gameplay on the field. What that was my question. What's the best sport to watch every week?
If you love, and I mean truly love the game of football, then just love the game of football.
That's
you don't have to get involved in all the high school drama bullshit that comes along with it. And trust me, it's hard not to. You just said that. And I would love to not get involved in it either, but that's kind of part of our job with this sweep. But when it comes down to it, you're right. Football is never been more exhilarating to watch. My wife's going to be
even with some of the rule changes that they've done.
For sure.
Because they have to do it.
They have to. And I was thinking about that, honestly, just before we started the show, as I was thinking, is there ever going to get to a point where they have to start doing things to make it a little bit more difficult for these athletes, these players that are coming, because they're so big and so strong and so fast. And we're at a point now where catching a ball with 2 hands is almost like a joke. Like everyone wants to catch it with 1, and you have quarterbacks who can run 4.3 40s, but also throw an 80-yard bomb. And I mean, so what I was trying to think of was, you know, is it going to get to a point where they lengthen the field or widen the field or make the goalposts smaller or make the football bigger for some reason? Or, you know what I mean? Like, I know that wouldn't actually happen, the football size, but at some point are the players going to be too good for the game? I mean, are they going to almost, is it going to get too easy?
You know, I don't think so. You want to know why? Because as the offenses get better,
the defense,
you see a correlation that there's going to be times there's going to be ups and downs. It's kind of an ebb and flow. The offenses get ahead, and then the defenses catch up, and then the offense get ahead. And it'll go in like 3 to 4 year waves almost, where you see astronomical scores all over the board throughout the season. And then you look two or three, maybe four seasons later, and that average score goes way down by like 6 or 7 points a game, which is a lot in the NFL, by the way. And then it'll go back up, and then it'll go back down. Because offenses are going to adjust to what defenses are doing. And once the defenses figure out how to adjust to what the offenses are doing, and it takes a couple of years. I mean, as coaches move through the NFL and more college stuff gets brought into the game and things are changing in the offenses, things change in the defenses. And the offense is usually going to always be a step ahead, a step or two ahead of the defenses. And you'll see defenses catch back up for a year or two, and then the offenses will figure out new wrinkles and new ways to get around it. And then the defenses will catch back up, and then the off. You know what I'm saying? It's an ebb and flow. It's like a freaking, it's a roller coaster. It really is. And that's what's fun to me about the NFL is there's always new things and new schemes and new ways to get around. I don't want to say get around, but beat the rules. So it's just like anything else in life is, yeah, the rules are going to change and you can't hit people the way you used to hit people. And there's good reasons for that. I mean, there's a lot of people that played in the NFL in the 80s and 90s that are suffering because they didn't do that. Now, I also think that you're going to see the average NFL career. You're not going to see, you know, 10, 15-year vets going forward. I think you're going to see a lot of 8, 9-year careers, and that's it, at all positions.
I think we've started to kind of see that. And that might be where it actually changes, and you know, not expanding the field and all that kind of stuff, but shortening careers, and you're not
going to... You know what that means, Fred? That means there's going to be that many more faster, bigger, stronger kids playing the game. So it's not going to go, the quality of play is not going to go down. I think it's just going to go up because you're going to have less old guys. And no offense to any of the guys that play a long time, because obviously the reason they're playing that long, they're really good at what they do. But even if you've played the game for 8 years, you can't tell me that you're as strong and fast as you were when you came into the league. That's just...
No. I mean, I'll be honest. I with Ethan and him getting into football, and I'll even give a shout-out to Nina Football. I saw a post the other day on Facebook, and I was looking at these kids, and I'm like, hey, no way. No way. We were not that big in high school. There's no way. And again, it's all perspective, and I'm sure we were bigger, as big as some of these kids. But I just look at them, like, these kids are built. Like, it looked like the entire team was Tim McCarthy's. And yeah. I'm like, you got to be kidding. Like, these kids are, like, 6'2", sculpted, incredible, you know, and that's the program that they run, and that's what's cool about it. But you're looking at it like, wow, there's kids that are in high school that are built like juniors in college, ready to start and play on big type teams. And I think that's just the progression we're seeing, is that these kids are starting to get better a lot earlier, and it's happening a lot quicker. And by the time they come into the NFL, they're not always, I mean, there's a lot of them who are still, but they're not always in that rookie. They're ready to rock, and they're ready to play with the big boys right when they come in, which is pretty exciting. So I'm good on that. Are you ready to move on to talk some, let's get into some actual Packer? I think we got excited about that. And I'll tell you what, it was an incredible question, and thank you for posting that on the sweep. Which you guys can check out, like Blaine said, on Facebook. We're also on the sweep and on Twitter at @sweep_PTTF. But if you guys want, go check that out on Facebook. Feel free to continue to comment on that. We'll play along with you guys, and we'll always have fun stuff on there. Blaine just came through with the bomb question there. I think we could sit and talk about that for days.
Well, and that's just it, is I don't want anybody to think if they said that the NBA is the best or the MLB is the best. To each their own. I'm not telling you you're wrong. There's no wrong answer there. I was just more interested, and it went kind of the way I figured that most people would say the NFL, because that's usually what our fans and what we like. But there were some others that, you know, picked the NBA, which I'll give props to the NBA, because it seems like everything they do, they're right on point. that is it Silverstein?
Yeah.
Their commissioner, he seems to have shit under wraps, and if there is something bad, they keep it tight to the vest and don't let it get out. I mean, everything hear about the NBA is usually good news.
Well, and with Stern, before Stern left, there was that period, you know, the early 2000s, where I think everybody in just the United States was in kind of a weird spot, but there was a lot of issues going on there, and things were starting to slip away, and Silverstein came in, and as goofy and weird as he looks, he came in and put the hammer down, and honestly, since he's come there, the NBA is pretty squeaky clean, and you see guys being respectful, and you don't see as many issues happening, which, again, they may be just controlling really well. We might not be able to see, but 10, 15 years ago, the NBA was the NFL when it came to domestic abuse and issues and drug problems and money problems and things like that. And it seems like it's kind of switched. So maybe that's another reason why Goodell needs to leave. Maybe we need someone who can come in. And Goodell came in and was all about being the law and doing this and that, but he got bought by the owners. And that whole law thing has kind of slipped away. Cause you're right. You know, with the LeSean McCoy, who I think his nickname Shady is now the most appropriate.
It sounds so bad for me to say it that way, because obviously a female being hurt the way she was, and possibly a dog disgusting. And another child and the drug use and the PEDs. If all of that is true, get him out. Oh.
And if they don't, that's where there will be a lot of problems.
Right. And on the other hand, if he's found that this is a fabricated story and this is a thing of jealousy and a female being upset with him for trying to get her kicked out of his house or whatever soap opera is going on behind the scenes that we all don't really know about, if that's all fabricated, she should be locked up.
Right. Because I think that's a thing that people, we have to quick say, is that as much as there are a lot of bad things happening,
there's way more good than bad.
Well, it just not only that, but there's also a lot of those same situations that females are using towards their advantage and fabricating. Yeah. And so a lot of times when we see these stories come out, we're like, oh my gosh, lock them up, put them through the ringer, you know, fire them, get them off the NFL, whatever. And there have been a lot of instances where that's happened, and it has been the female. So
right.
You have to give them due justice, and we have to figure out what went wrong. But when you do figure out what went wrong, and when it is confirmed that that was the situation, then you need to come down hard, and you need to let the league know that this is unacceptable. Mm-hmm. And if someone wants to smoke some weed,
that's what bothers me. How can you give them more smoking pot and only get maybe two or three games for beating your wife?
It makes no sense.
That needs to be fixed.
It absolutely does. I think that is the most backward situation that I've ever seen. And I think, you know,
with somehow the NBA has it figured out.
Yeah. I don't know.
The NBA does. Follow their lead.
Figure it out. We shouldn't even have to talk about that. Like, that shouldn't even be a question, but here we are talking about it. All right. Are you good on that?
I'm good on that. Let's move on to some of the fans.
Let's go on to the fan questions, but let's quick say hey to the amazing sponsors at the Ground Round before we get into some great fan questions that were sent in.
Hey, Packer fans. Ryan Batley from the Ground Round Grill and Bar here. Packers off-season means patio season for us at the restaurant. Our outdoor patio overlooks the Bridgewood Golf Course and is complete with 4 fire pits that make for a great evening dinner. Every Thursday, you can enjoy live music from 6 to 9 p.m. Our Patty Shack Pavilion is the perfect spot to host rehearsal dinners, class reunions, bridal or baby showers, birthday parties, and even company happy hours. With happy hours 7 days and 7 nights of the week, and daily specials to go along with it, there's always a deal to be found. You won't miss any Brewer baseball action this summer in our sports lounge, as we have 21 TVs and seating for groups of all sizes. Ground Round can still be part of your day even without coming to the restaurant. We deliver our full menu 7 days a week, so your team at work or your family at home doesn't have to settle for the same thing at mealtime. Each person can order their own entree and get what they want. Order online or by phone at 920-725-1010. Thanks for listening, and now back to the guys at the Sweep.
All right, thanks, Bally. We are back. We are going to hit up some fan questions, which thank you guys for doing that. Again, hit us up on Facebook or Twitter, or if you know us, you can message us. I don't care. Do whatever you need to do, but get involved. Make sure and let us know what you guys think, even what you guys think about the show and stuff like that. But we asked out for some questions, got some great ones. We got a couple from Facebook and a couple from Twitter. And we will start here with our first question from Twitter, from Adam Linder, at Adam Linder 16. And he wrote, which rookie draft picks do you see making an immediate impact for the Packers this season? I'll let you start off.
Ooh.
Or do you want me to go?
You go ahead, because you had
got caught a little. I knew about it. Yeah.
I don't know that there's a wrong answer here, because I think that there's so much talent that we got in the draft, and it doesn't happen like this every year. Even some of our later round draft picks are going to have – they have the potential, and they're going to have an opportunity to see the field if they can make themselves stand out a little bit in camp.
Yeah.
Especially at wide receiver, to me, is like the thing to watch this year, because I feel like that group has so much young talent in it that no matter who makes it and who gets cut, we're going to be losing a couple of talented guys.
Yeah.
I think, but who do you think is going to make the biggest impact? I'd love to hear what you have to say about that. Right. I think that's probably going to be on the defensive side.
He says immediate impact. So I kind of took that to heart initially. And I've got seven guys who I think that we'll all be starting easily by the end of the year.
I hope you're wrong.
Probably well before that. You think I'm wrong?
I hope you're wrong. I don't think you're going to be wrong. I'm not saying that you're wrong, but I hope you're wrong, because it's not usually a recipe for a Super Bowl champion.
It's not. But here's the thing. Okay, so you got Josh Jackson in the second round. Jair Alexander. I don't know yet. I just can't. I'm not there yet with him. I want to see how things work out. I want to see how it all goes down. But I love Josh Jackson, and I think he will make an impact. And that's a personal thing. Oren Burks, I think, will be someone that we've all kind of forgot about somehow in the draft. I think it's a name that we're not talking about as much, but I love what he has in his physical tools and his ability. And I think he will be given a role in Pettine's defense that will let him kind of shine, and he will work it.
I'm going to make a bold prediction on him right now. I'm going to say he's going to be in the top three on our team in interceptions this year.
Ooh. You want to bet on that?
No.
Or do you want to?
But I just feel like he's going to be – initially he's going to be a third down guy for us, because he's going to be our best coverage linebacker. I feel like he can line up with a tight end and a running back out of the backfield better than any other linebacker we've had in a long time. And I think he's good enough that he is going to bait some of the young quarterbacks. And I think he's going to have 3 or 4 picks this year.
Okay. I hope you're right. That's all I'm going to say. I love him. I think that he is one of the sleepers in the draft, which is weird because he's a third round pick. But like I said, I think he's just kind of gotten hidden in the cornerback and wide receiver talk. But to talk about receivers, I think Jamon Moore is going to be incredible. I think he will end up as our number three. And I think Equanimous St. Brown down at round six, I love, and I've been high on since well before the draft. And I still don't understand why he dropped to the sixth round. And I hope that it was some weird fluke and it wasn't something that I don't know about.
I am really excited to see DeShone Kizer throw him a pass in the preseason.
Yes. See some spark there.
Right. Well, I think that's how he's going to stand out, is because I think him and DeShone are going to have a connection that I just hope it translates and gives Rodgers enough confidence in him so that he gives him a chance. Because you know how Rodgers can be.
He's a little picky, yep.
He's very needy. And that sounds bad, but I don't mean needy in a bad way. I mean he's very precise. And if you're not doing it the way he expects you to do it, and you screw him and it costs him to look bad, he's not going to trust you, and it's going to take you a long time to get that trust back.
Well, and rightly so, I think. But
right.
I think with Equanimous, yeah, I think if you get him out there in preseason with Kaiser and he starts to he builds his own confidence then going in. Because I think if you have any sense of intelligence, and you better if you're in the NFL, you know that you're going in the locker room with potentially the greatest of all time at quarterback, and you know about his repertoire and what he likes. You're not going to be dumb. You're going to make sure in every way possible that you're doing the right things for him.
Here's what everyone in that room needs to understand. And if they don't understand it, there's a problem. If Aaron Rodgers tells you to do something a certain way, you better do it that way.
Yeah.
Because he knows. He probably knows as much about the wide receiver position as any wide receiver in that room.
Yeah.
And if he wants you to do it a certain way, there's a reason. And if you don't do it that way, you might as well just go sit on the bench because you're not going to see the ball anyways. Jeff Janis is one of those guys that I can use as an example. I think he had all of the physical tools, but just refused or didn't have the ability to do it the way Rodgers wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And the only time Janis got an opportunity is when Rodgers didn't have a choice and had to use him because he was the only guy that he could get on the field.
Other than that,
Janis never stood out unless it was special teams.
Yeah.
My question to you, based off of the wide receivers, is how many do they keep?
6.
Really?
Yeah.
Who are they?
Potentially.
I think they got to keep 7.
Well, it depends.
Initially.
I think initially you're probably right. I think they eventually go down to 6.
Because for two weeks at the beginning, Aaron Jones isn't going to be available.
Right. You can play around. You have some maneuverings.
And you can protect that player that way. Right?
Yeah.
Because if you keep him rostered for the first 2 weeks, then you can drop him down, put Aaron Jones back on the roster, and keep that one of the younger wide receivers on your practice squad after that.
Yeah. No, there's definitely ways around it that you maneuver to benefit yourself.
So who's getting cut? Is Trevor Davis finally going to get booed?
He's my question mark. He's actually my guy that I'm not sure that even rounds it out to 6. I mean, he would be my 6th guy right now. There's just a couple.
So you got Adams, Cobb, Allison, Moore, St. Brown.
Oh, I don't even have St. Brown in here. That's where I'm missing it. Okay, so then I have Davis as my potential 7. I have Clark and Yancey
on the practice.
I know people aren't big on Yancey, but I wanna
give him a I'm big on Clark. I know that.
I know a lot of people are.
I think he's going to be huge in camp this year, and I think he makes the team. I think he's going to be the last wide receiver on the roster.
Yeah. All right. Let me get back to
I'm going to Adams, Cobb, Allison.
Moore. St. Brown,
Clark. Those are my 6. And if they keep 7, I think it's going to be between Scantling and Yancey. I think Davis is gone. I think he's had his opportunity. He's a Ted guy, and I think that's one of the reasons why he's still around is because it's one of Ted's draft picks, and for heaven forbid,
Scantling's going to take over that. I mean, Scantling offers more. He offers not only – because Davis didn't do anything but potentially return. Scantling not only can return, but is also a dynamo on special teams. Davis didn't offer anything defensively in special teams. I agree with that. I would go Adams, Cobb, Moore, Allison, St. Brown, Clark, and Yancey. But let me just get back to Adams' question here. The other guy, Cole Madison, tackle guard, who I think he's my favorite probably out of the entire draft. I just have a lot of high hopes for him. I think he'll eventually make a huge mark. But here's the thing.
He's a potential starter.
I think he was the guy that – I don't know if he's going to start right away, but I definitely see him by week three being in the mix for – like locked in. That's the guy we're going to see for the next 10 years kind of guy.
So who's playing right tackle? Kyle Murphy?
To start.
Bulaga is not going to be ready.
I'm thinking they'll have Spriggs at right tackle.
Oh.
I know. But here's the thing. He bulked up, which is huge. He needed to put some weight on and some good weight. And the thing with offensive linemen with the Packers is that all of them haven't really seemed to come into their fruition until like their third year. I mean, very rarely have we had a guy that's come in outside of Bulaga.
I hope you're right.
And started his first or second year and been great.
I hope you're just not in love because you fell in love with him in the draft process. Because
I picked him?
Shut up. I think that might be a little bit of your infatuation.
No, I fell hard for him in the
draft process. I don't blame you. He was a beast.
And I liked a lot of what he has, and I'm not giving up on him. I'm giving him this is his final year. I've made that public, that if he doesn't figure it out this year, then, my God, get out of here. But I just
hope it doesn't cost Rodgers for not even one game.
Don't say that. All right. But back to Lindner's question, Adam's question one more time. Immediate impact, J.K. Scott and Hunter Bradley.
I feel like you've just named every draft pick.
I know. I love this draft class, and that's crazy. But I think when it comes to immediate impact, those two guys are guys that are probably going to start the season. So to be fair, those two are going to be the most immediate impacts for me. But, I mean, it's a really good draft class. And I think mix that in with last year's draft class, which – a lot of people don't think was that great, and it really wasn't, but we didn't really get a full fair analysis of that draft class because of the injury problems. And Kevin King was injured most of the season, played on a little bit of it. Beagle was hurt.
Montrevious Adams
was hurt. I mean, those are three guys. Like, I know Beagle is not necessarily going to be, you know, JJ Watt maybe, but I think he will be a very good contributor. I love what Montrevious Adams can do. And I think he'll be behind what looks like it's going to be one of the best defensive lines in the NFL.
Don't forget about my boy, Josh Jones. He's probably the best rookie we had last year.
And I guess
that's running backs.
And I guess I kind of forget that because I liked him and I thought he played better than a rookie, and so I kind of, you know, and I think he will have even a bigger impact this year because he's not going to be playing 48 different positions.
Right.
He's going to play a position, and that was just part of Capers' stupidity. Do you have anyone else that you would throw on there? I mean, I know I kind of covered the entire draft class, but as immediate impact, I mean, I kind of went through 1 through 6. I would be surprised if anyone.
He's not a rookie, but it's kind of like a rookie season for him. But you kind of mentioned him. Montrevious Adams, I think, is going to – in that rotation with that D-line, I think he's not going to stand out like a Mike Daniels, obviously, or a Muhammad Wilkerson or a Kenny Clark. But that second wave of guys there, I mean, I think we've seen Dean Lowry kind of stand out in that second wave.
Yeah.
I think this is the year we see Montrevious Adams – take that next step.
Yeah, it gives us a real nice depth. And
right.
That's something that we have not had at all in the last.
It's kind of crazy to think that Dean Lowry is the fourth best interior lineman because I think he could start on a lot of other NFL teams. I really do.
I do too. I like a lot of what he does, and I think that we're going to get to know his name a lot more this year.
Yep.
Exciting. All right, we'll move on to our Facebook questions. And our first one comes from good friend Chris Kellett, the newest basketball coach at Appleton North. And he's got another son coming. So props to Chris. Congratulations on that.
Congrats, Chris.
Always been a really good contributor to the Sweep. We love him on Facebook. He usually does not agree with anything we say, which is kind of what we're looking for. So he asked, will the Packers add another edge rusher, or are they confident in Beagle and Gilbert, who I guess we didn't really mention Gilbert much there, but I'll let you start off with this one.
I saw the question, and it kind of got me thinking about it because, like you said, we've been wrapped up with wide receiver and DBs, and the edge rushers have kind of taken a back seat, which is kind of shocking coming from you and I, because edge rusher has been a highly spoken of topic over the last 2 years, I think, on our show. And the one thing I'll say is I don't think that they can add another edge rusher, because I don't think that there is an edge rusher out there that is worth taking a chance on. Now, a lot of stuff can happen between now and week one. I think right now they're going to stay where they're at. And I think a guy that Chris might be forgetting about, and I think I know why, because he doesn't like him and doesn't have any faith in him, and he's one of your boys. I think that Fackrell, if he put on some weight and bulked up a little bit and can get his shit together, he has the length, and I think he's fast enough. I'm not saying he's the next Clay Matthews, but I think he can be a good spell guy.
Am I getting some love for Fackrell finally?
Finally. But there's a lot of ifs and buts in that statement.
There is, for sure.
I still think they have Fackrell listed above Gilbert on that depth chart right now. I don't think that's how that will be. I think between the three of them, they're going to be the three guys that rotate in at both sides. I don't think there's going to be a right and a left for those three. They're going to have to know both. And after Clay and Perry, I think that goes – The skill level goes down. The thing that I think is going to be good for those three guys is that they're not going to have to play too many snaps every game, as long as the other guys can stay healthy, which is, you don't have as good odds. No. You have better odds flipping a coin than you do saying they're going to stay healthy. But hopefully they only have to play, 15 snaps each a game. Would be probably my target between Beagle, Fackrell, and Gilbert. So if they can spell those guys enough to keep them fresh and keep themselves fresh all at the same time, we should be able to throw fresh bodies at them, at the offensive linemen, all day. And I think that's going to be the ticket. And I also think that Pettine coming up with some different schemes and how to get them after the quarterback is going to be a huge deal, and it's going to help Clay and Perry and everybody else. I think we're going to see a lot of sacks coming from our interior guys, because they're going to be that dominant.
Well, and I think it goes back to the defensive line.
Right. If the guys in the middle aren't getting the sacks, then the guys on the outside better be cleaning it up. They got to win a one-on-one battle, because I guarantee you that interior defensive line is going to be taking up three to four guys every time.
Easily. And I think that's the thing. I think the defensive line will really help our pass rush out.
Well, and our DBs. If our coverage is better.
For sure.
The sack numbers are going to go up.
It's got to be a well-oiled machine, man. It's got to work all together. People don't – it's not one set of guys that's going to change the game. Football is not that way. Football is extremely dependent on a team game. I mean, obviously Aaron Rodgers is a little different. You know, talk offenses. But in defense, as good as Clay Matthews can be, he can't be good if there's no defensive line and our corners can't cover for crap.
But he also can't be good if he's not healthy.
And if he's always hurt, which, believe me, you guys know, you've listened to the show before, Matthews and Perry are not our friends, my friends at least. But here's the thing, and I'm going to throw this out with the edge rusher situation. This is what I've been telling people, and this is what I've been sticking to, is that with Matthews and Perry, it drives me nuts because they're so inconsistent and they get paid a ton of money. But Perry, when healthy, is very good at being a containing outside linebacker, which is what his job basically is for the most part. Matthews, when healthy, has to be accounted for. He's not as good as he was that one year when he was incredible, but he still has to be accounted for, and he can still wreak havoc when needed. Here's the thing, though, and this is my inner GM wannabe kind of thing going on here. We've had to keep Matthews, and I think Matthews will have a bigger year this year because of two reasons: contract year and Patton. I think Patton's going to make a big difference. He's going to find ways to let Matthews shine without putting all of it on Matthews, and I think that's a huge deal. But I think Matthews is gone after this year, and he won't be re-signed, and it's the perfect time. It's lined up so perfectly for us because the next year's draft is just loaded with incredible edge rushing DNs and outside linebackers.
I think I think what you just said about Matthews being gone all depends on the year he has this year.
If he has a great year, he's gone. 10 years or 10 sacks, he's gone.
Yeah.
If he has a bad year,
if he has a mediocre, what's a bad year?
Well, five a bad sacks? Year would be him playing seven games and getting two sacks or something. But we'll say a mediocre year. So we'll say he plays in almost all the games and has six, seven sacks. That's pretty mediocre, right? That's what he had last year, right?
Yeah, I would say he gets a one-year contract.
You think he'll get a one-year deal again?
Yep, because I think that, well, I hope that they don't go all in on draft picks and say, okay, we're going to take a draft pick at 32 overall and we're going to replace Clay Matthews with a rookie.
Okay, but here's my thing. Because
you didn't catch what I just said, did you?
No, I got it, 32. That's expected. I expect to pick 32 every year. But here's the thing, is it is one of the most exciting edge rushing classes I've seen in a long time.
But you're going to replace Clay Matthews with a rookie, basically with a second-round pick.
But here's my kicker. You got two first-round picks you can play with, you can trade up with. If there's a guy that you can and hypothetical, I mean, it could end up being we pick 32 and New Orleans picks 27 or something, and that's a little bit harder to work with. You're not going to get to move up in, like, the top 10 probably. But you'll get to close. You'd be pretty damn close. Yeah, I mean, maybe not top five. Let's go. You could probably get into the 7 to 10 range if you maybe throw something else in there. But
at two firsts and a third,
you could get. I mean, and I'm telling you, this class is ridiculous. It's ridiculous when it comes to edge rushing. If that's the case, are you more apt then to saying, okay, let Matthews walk? We have all that money that we save, basically.
If he has a shitty year, that one-year deal is going to be a one-year prove-it deal at the age of what? How old is he going to be, 30, 31?
So you'd be a one-year, six-year deal, a $6 million deal or something weird like that. I get it. I mean, yeah, maybe it wouldn't be bad to bring him back just to help teach the young buck. But
and to have depth.
Right. But I think my main point is that.
Then you can let Fackrell go.
Shut up. A lot of this. All right. So I don't, to answer Chris's question, I don't think they're going to obviously add a pass or edge rusher now, because I don't think it's just not feasible, like you had said. But be excited for next year, because I think that is where they go. And I think that has been, you know, something that the Goot has prepared himself for. I mean, we look at GMs and we talk about this year, next year's draft, and people are like, oh, you're already talking about next year's draft.
Yep.
Goot's talking about 5 years from now. I mean, he's got it planned. They've had this plan to know that Matthews will be done, and we got a class coming up that's going to be ridiculous, because you know where these guys are and where they're going to get to, and you can kind of tell, okay, you know, Bosa's younger brother is going to, you know, he had a great first year. He's going to eventually get to a point, or
he's going to be a top five pick.
You got a top five pick there easily. You got about three guys in the defensive line from Clemson that are all going to be just studs.
Probably all in the top 15.
Top 15. I mean, if you look at mock drafts right now, people, no joke, in the top 10, there are six defensive linemen. As of right now. I know that changes. But as of right now, there are six defensive linemen.
Yeah, it's going to change, Fred, and you know what's going to happen? There's going to be more than that, because absolutely. There's going to be the kid from UTEP. The DN. There's going to be kids like that jump in there from a smaller school that come out of nowhere that nobody really knows about until draft time comes.
Yes, there's already a couple guys that are like that are in there that are a little bit smaller school guys that are projected right now in like the second round to us. And
jump.
teams in that area that are going to get in the first round. So yeah, I think for us, it's that's kind of embrace and enjoy Matthew's potential final year and give him. He's got a contract year. Petten's there. There will be change. There will be some. Like, he will find ways to get Matthews to play where he needs to play. And I think everyone's a little scared from last year because of the defensive situation and Rodgers going down. And that's what I mentioned earlier, right in the beginning of the show, was that it's kind of nice because I think everyone's kind of confused and scared, but I think we're actually sitting in a pretty good situation right now when it comes to
who flying under the radar.
It's flying under the radar and who we have as our youth and who we have kind of coming up here. I mean, we could potentially have, you know, if Jackson and Jair and King all work out, you know, that's three studs in the and corners, and Haha's going to come back, and I know he's going to have a better year this year. I just know it.
The corners and free agency talk and the Packers adding an edge rusher, I wouldn't be shocked if there's another signing. If they can figure it out monetarily wise and contracts and get some money for him, there's still a pretty good corner out there. He was originally going to sign with the Panthers and failed his physical because of a foot thing. Rashad Breeland is still out there waiting to sign with a team. And I think that within the first 2 weeks of training camps, he will be on a team. And I think after the first week, Green Bay will have an idea of where their corners are at. And if there's even a shadow of a doubt on one of those three guys not working out, I think he's on the speed dial list for Goop. And I think he should be, because he's very, very good when he's healthy and would just take that. It would make me feel way better having a guy that's had some NFL experience in there that's not as old as Tremont, because I still love Tremont, but he's just not what he used to be. And hopefully he still plays at the level he played last year. I'm not going to count on that. I think Rashad Breeland is a guy that everybody in Pack Nation should keep their eye on.
All right. You heard it here first, people.
And I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying that if there's another signing, a bigger name, like high potential contributor, that's the guy.
All right. I mean, I wouldn't be mad about it. I think in today's football, which is so heavily saturated with passing, I think it's you have to have a plethora of good defensive backs, because every team has 2-3 stud. I mean, back in the day, it was you had one really good receiver, and then you maybe had another decent one. Now it's like teams have 2-3 star receivers, and how do you cover these guys? I think that position is just growing so fast. But to kind of bounce off that, DBs and wide receivers, our second question from Neil Saunders, another incredible supporter of the Sweep. We love you, Neil. Always down with throwing us questions, always a part of the group. We're big fans of yours, believe me. He asks, which DBs, defensive backs, and wide receivers are not making the team? We kind of went over the receivers.
Yep.
But as for DBs, I mean, I have the four or five obvious, and that's obviously Kevin King, Tremont Williams, Jair Alexander. Wow, I can't say his name fast. Josh Jackson, Devon Hulse. Those are your five that I think we all know. Past those five, who are you looking at? I got Rollins. I think Rollins gets another shot. Lindsey Pipkins kind of showed a little bit last year, especially with special teams. Hawkins as well. He kind of does a little bit of both. I think he's versatile.
Well, I guess the question remains is, how many safeties do you want to keep? I mean,
to double that question, how many safeties are actually true safeties?
Well, Josh Jones and Haha, I think you have four.
Evans.
The question is, do you keep Evans? Because Ravon Green's not going to make it.
No.
So if you're going to keep five, So you're saying Jones, Dix, Bryce, Whitehead, and Evans are all going to make it. We're going to have five safeties.
Yeah. And I think so, you chalk that up to some depth at safety, but you also look at it as these are special teams guys as well. I mean, because safety and linebacker and corner and a little bit of receiver are what make up your special teams pretty much.
So how many corners do you think they're going to keep? Six corners?
I would go seven. Maybe so, even eight.
So Herb Waters, Donatello Brown.
Herb Waters is my question mark. But he's also a big question mark. He's a very much was a project kind of guy.
He's Sam Shields Jr. is what he is.
And that's why I love him. And that's where my biasness comes, and that's why I didn't throw him in there, and I wanted to question mark him. But I think I've read from other people and heard that, you know, he's got the potential to be something special, but he's so raw that how much time can you give the guy to build?
So he's probably a practice squad guy.
Probably.
So Waters is practice
for another year.
Waters isn't going to make it. Donatello Brown's probably not going to make it.
Probably not.
And then you got to make a call between Goodson and Hawkins.
And I'm taking Hawkins over Goodson because I'm done with Goodson.
Okay.
So I didn't even know Goodson was on the team still.
Waters, Goodson.
You drafted him like 7 years ago, I feel like.
Waters, Goodson, and Brown are not.
And Goodson was a basketball player. Was one of Ted's project basketball players, who I know you love.
Greatest GM ever.
Shut up.
Okay, that answers that. So who's not going to make it for wide receivers? We already kind of discussed that. Obviously, Jake Kummerow.
Yeah, poor Jake.
He's not going to make it.
He can get a job at State Farm, though.
I think Davis doesn't make it.
Unless he does something special in preseason.
And I think the other guy we're leaving off that list is probably Yancey.
And Yancey's going to have to do something to impress people. But I was big on us drafting Yancey, but I think that Jamon Moore is a better Yancey. And so that's where I think Yancey will fall.
Well, and we decided that Valdez-Scantling is too valuable on special teams.
Yeah, and a better, way better Davis in that sense. So maybe we stick with just the six wideouts and roll deeper on corner, or we go six and seven, six wide, seven corners.
Well, and then what another crazy position to think about numbers and how many are you going to keep is quarterback.
Right, which we're not even going to get involved.
I mean, Hundley, they have him listed still at second, but you're not trading a first-round pick for a quarterback, basically, and then not going to keep him, right?
Yeah. No, I think Kaiser easily beats Hundley. I think for Green Bay, I think what happened last year with Rodgers really sucked for them, because I think their plan has always been, let's get Hundley. Everyone will think he's great because he's behind Rodgers and he's could be the next Rodgers kind of thing. And then we'll put him in a couple preseason games and he'll look really good. And then we'll sell him for a second round pick or something when it's his last year. And then last year Rodgers gets hurt. Hundley has to actually play up and the hand got shown and people were like, nah, now we're probably not even going to get a sixth round pick for the guy. And so I think that kind of sucks. And that's just one of those things. I think they're going to keep Hundley until around the season starts and then consider potentially moving him.
Well, they'll keep him around just to see, just for the competition for Kaiser.
Right, for sure. But I think Kaiser beats him. I think Kaiser's a way better quarterback. But let me, because I don't want to get even in that right now, because I that's a whole other topic and we're draining the battery here. But
The even bigger topic will be the offensive line, because there's going to be some tough decisions made there as well.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge thing, and we'll get into that maybe next week or our next show, because that's been my biggest concern going into the year. This year was the offensive line, and as much as I love Cole Madison, it just wasn't enough for me personally to get me to feel like, okay, we're gonna be all right. So there's still, it needs to work out. Spriggs needs to get his shit. Bulaga needs to get back and stay healthy, which, when is he supposed to be back? Do you know? I've heard different things. I've heard crazy different numbers.
He will start the year on the PUP list. And okay. I think that means he can't come, whatever list he's on, he won't be able to come back until like week 6.
Right. So we're looking at a pretty decent amount of time.
If that's the IR or the PUP list, I can't remember how exactly.
I'm pretty sure it's PUP. But I think IR is later in the season. I think that's like week 9 or something weird like that.
Which, but I don't know that that's the worst thing in the world. If he only has to play 10 regular season games, he might be able to make it all 10 and the playoffs and still be healthy.
For sure. So the question then is just who can step up in those 6 games prior? And yeah. I think Spriggs is more ready than anyone because Murphy doesn't have the time or the experience. I loved Murphy. I thought it was crazy he went to 7th round, but he's a guy that will be a good asset, I think, like in 3 years when he starts getting going in it, two years maybe, where Spriggs, I think, has to happen. And that's where I think they kind of have, if it doesn't, they got Byron Bell and they got Cole Madison as a kind of options maybe to kind of move around. And it'll be interesting. That right side of the offensive line is going to be.
You don't have any faith in Kofi Amici yet?
Oh, I love Kofi.
I mean, he's going to challenge Cole and Justin McCray for the right guard spot.
And see, okay, here's the thing with Kofi, and I love him. I was super pumped when we drafted him. He is a freakish athlete for the position, but extremely raw. Yep. So for me with him, I love him, and I very much expect to see him on that offensive line, just not this year. I don't know if in the 1 year that he's been on the Green Bay Packers, if he's gotten to the point where he's ready to start, well, then touche. But I just don't know if he's quite ready yet, and I think it's going to take one more year to kind of perfect his craft a little bit.
I'm not going to disagree with that. I'm just saying that he's going to push that right guard. He's going to challenge that right guard, whoever it is. Right now, I think they have McCray kind of penciled in there, but I think that he is a good person to have there.
Yes.
To push that person to be good.
Yes. I feel like it's going to be kind of like a bottleneck situation where we have a lot of decent, pretty good options, and they're going to battle, and eventually one of them is going to squeeze out, and someone's going to make that step and push themselves and get to that point. Who that is, I'm not quite sure yet, and I hate that feeling. But it's also kind of exciting. It's kind of exciting to see who's going to make that jump. So,
well, we kind of thought that way about Lane Taylor, and he's turned out to be
solid. Done that. Yeah. So I have a lot of faith in the Green Bay Packers when it comes to organizing an offensive line. They have made the right calls when it comes to getting rid of guys. They've made the right calls when it's been time for guys to step up. We've produced some pretty incredible talent out of latter round picks when it comes to the offensive line in the last 10 years. So I'm going to just continue to believe in that system that they've done. And that's why I focus so heavily on that 3 to 4th year kind of guy with Spriggs and with, like I just said, with Kofi taking at least another year, because it always has seemed like they've taken that step where they're in their second year and you're like, oh, maybe they're just not that good. And they even get to that 3rd year, if they're not there yet, you're like, that's it. But then all of a sudden they blossom. It's like they that one extra year they get and they click it. So I'm hoping that's what happens with a few of those offensive linemen, and we can look back on this and say, oh, we should have gave that guy a little more credit, or we should have known better. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a year of a little unknowing, but in the same breath, I'm very excited because I think we're going to see some some young guys really step up, and I think that's always really exciting for a team. It's a change. It's all a change. We got different D coordinator, different offensive coordinator, a lot of new faces. It's gonna be a change. But if you stick with us at the suite, we'll make sure you're in line and know who's going good and what's going good and who's good and who looks good and all that goodness. So make sure that you guys hang out with us in the suite. We will get back to our normal broadcasting, if you will, sooner than later. We'll enjoy the summer a little bit, but once the training camp kicks in, we'll be back in action and bringing you guys information as much as possible. Do you have any final thoughts before we kind of get moving here?
Don't forget about the 28th. I'm not 100% sure if we're going to have another episode before then. Hopefully we can get one more in at least. But our fundraiser at the Ground Round Nina, there's all kinds of awesomeness to be silent auctioned off there. I'm sure I'll drop at least a couple $100 like I always do. Yes. Usually Mr. Batley tries to steal stuff from me. And we raise some money for a good cause and to help support the show. And to all the fans that do come out, thank you in advance. If you can't make it, that's fine too. I was going to talk to Fred about this first, but I'm going to mention it anyways. I might do something on the side with some silent auction stuff on our Facebook page. So yep, maybe be looking for some of that stuff. For those of you that don't live in the area and can't make it to that, I thought it would be a good idea to try to get some people involved that way. So be looking for that in the near future, either the night before or the weekend after. I was planning on doing some of that. I'd probably leave it open for 24 hours, probably do 3 or 4 items at least there. So just be looking forward to that.
Yeah, we got lots of cool stuff coming this year. That's going to be awesome. I got another surprise that'll be coming up a little bit closer towards the season that I'll let you guys know about. But make sure you guys follow us on Facebook. Like Blaine said, go up to the little search button, type in the sweep. We are there. We should be number one for you guys. And try and make it on the 28th. We'll make sure and do some live video while we're there to see, so you guys can see what's going on. I probably will even hit up a live video even before that just to kind of get you guys excited. And I'll be releasing the item list that will be at the silent auction. I was planning on doing it real soon, but I might wait a little bit just to keep you guys on your toes. But like he said, there's going to be some awesome stuff. I'm telling you, just hard to find stuff you're not going to be able to find on a regular basis, and stuff you guys are going to want to make sure you guys get involved with. So come see us there, and make sure and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And I'm pumped, man. That felt good. I'm excited to be back on the mic and getting going here and make sure you guys are with us and we'll keep rocking it. So with that being said, there's only one way to finish this. Go Pack, go.
Go Pack, go, baby.
All right, we'll see you guys soon. Later.